Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Must See Matches. I am, as always, Kieran Lefort, and also, as always, I'm accompanied by the man behind Must See Matches, Mark Buckledy. Mark, how are you doing this week?
Not as good as I normally am, but still good, thanks.
Okay. That's a shame, but still sort of good, I think. This week, we're looking at what I think I called our first under-the-radar oddity last week in Daisuke Ikeda versus Yuki Ishikawa from Futen's Batty Batty 1 show on April the 24th, 2005. And we've called upon perhaps the one person who can explain this match, this promotion, this style, everything about what it was I watched this week. And that's Dylan Fox of Eastern Lariat. He's here to be our guide. Dylan, welcome. How's it going?
I am so honored to be on, Kieran. Mark, I've been a huge fan of your writing, and this is the first time we've ever met any one of us here. So this was, when you asked me about it, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited, because this takes me really far back into my original days of watching Japanese wrestling a decade plus ago. And, you know, I told you off the air, I was listening to some of your other shows, and I know the quality of not just you guys, but the guests you've had on is really strong throughout. So I'm glad that I'm able to be in this class. And like you said, under the radar oddity, I think that describes me quite well as well. So I think this is a perfect fit for everybody, but I'm so happy because Battle Arts is my favorite company, and the company we're going to talk about always has a place in my heart. So yeah, I can't wait to get into things.
So for me personally, I think I've maybe seen two Battle Arts matches in my whole life. My only actual connection in inverted commas to Battle Arts is I've seen Alexander Otsuka wrestle live once. And he's the person I think of when I think of Battle Arts. So I'm assuming there's going to be more people listening to this who are in this same kind of position. Yeah. Can you sort of like, okay, start at the beginning. What is Battle Arts and how does it differ from professional wrestling as we would think of it?
Yeah, you know, there's a great backstory to this, and I'll try and be brief. That's not exactly one of my strengths. If anybody knows me from my regular shows, I tend to talk a lot, you know, so I want to apologize if things go too long for anybody. But I was taking some notes. I was thinking about everything I could say on the show. I just watched this match yesterday. But so if you are familiar with shoot style at all, basically there was the original one that everybody goes to is UWF. Mm-hmm. And that was started by Sayama and Akira Maeda in the 80s. And they went through all kinds of hassles. They had UWF2 that came in the late 80s. And then after that happened, it split off as the 90s started into three different promotions. You had three different guys start their own companies. You had Maeda with Rings. And that was a company that was very, very concerned about making wrestling as real as possible. Like, they wanted to keep hold of it. They had actual shoot fights on some of their shows. Not all of them were shoot fights, but they just wanted to convince everybody that they all were. It was based on Maeda. You had UWFI. That was Takada's promotion, Nobuhiko Takada. Mm-hmm. And that was shoot style, but also was not afraid to be more theatrical, like with Vader coming in, Big Van Vader, and doing a lot of cool
stuff.
Yes,
I've seen some
of
that. I did a show with Alan Forel a few months ago about Vader's whole career and watched a load of UWFI for that. And that's, I found that tremendously entertaining, like the mix of shoot style and sort of like light theatricality to go along with it is a very entertaining combination.
Yeah, absolutely. And the third one was called Pro Wrestling Fujiwara Gumi, which was based off of Fujiwara, obviously. And that's where the two men we're going to talk about today came from. But more importantly, the most important one between the two is definitely Yuki Ishikawa, because he started Battle Arts. Mm-hmm. And basically the reason that happened was PWFG, the sponsors tried to meddle. This is a constant state of pro wrestling, especially at this time, but especially for PWFG. And it wasn't like, you know, because you see other exoduses in Japanese wrestling, like All Japan, obviously, most notably into Noah. He took a bunch of his guys and started his own company called Battle Arts, but it wasn't like he was pissed at Fujiwara and it led to a big falling out. It was more like Fujiwara was like, oh, you're starting your own thing? Okay. And he was actually there at the very first show, even though Ishikawa had broken off with it to his own promotion. So if you know Battle Arts, it's like, the full name of it is called like Fighting Investigative Team Battle Arts.
That's right.
And, yeah. And the purpose of that is, if you're familiar with Ishikawa as well, they don't mean it like a detective or whatever. It was more like they're trying to investigate what the best style of wrestling is. And that's why if you look at Battle Arts and their history, not necessarily this match we're going to talk about today and its successor company, though we're getting there, I promise. This all has a point. I'm just not saying stuff for no reason. But Ishikawa had Battle Arts in mind because he wanted to recreate Inoki, what he did in the 80s. Inoki is his super idol. Like, Ishikawa loves Inoki. That's something you have to know about him. So he brought in all of these guys. You know, you have a lot of different styles, and a lot of people transitioned from Bachi Bachi style to pro wrestling now. People now, like Minoru Tanaka, Ikuto Hidaka, Yone Inoue, current Gaura TV champion Ryuji Hijikata in All Japan. We cannot disrespect the Gaura TV title, but they
everyone else can.
Not on my show, damn it. It's not my show, but any show that I'm on, we cannot disrespect the Gaura TV title. I will not accept it. But yes, but the thing is, he would bring in people from all over the place. You had in Battle Arts, he would have those kind of shoot styly wrestlers. You'd have actual MMA guys like Rampage Jackson was on a Battle Arts show, like way, way before he was at TNA. If anybody remembers that, he was on there. Various martial arts guys. You had Big Japan guys like Deathmatch guys. You had Jeff Hardy was in Battle Arts before he was in WWF.
I think we discussed on episode one, one of the things I found while doing like research and like putting things together for this project was the Road Warriors turned up in Battle Arts. Was not expecting like Road Warrior Animal to do this style at all, for example.
Yeah, Ishikawa is just a big fan of those guys, pretty much. And that's like how he ran his company. He would bring in luchadors and stuff like that, Negro Casas, Mil Mascaras. But the ultimate purpose was that was what he was trying to do, was recreate Inoki's stuff that he did in the 80s with the martial arts championship and bringing in like Muhammad Ali and all that stuff. And they were successful too. People might not know this, but they were running that. They actually got up to the point to where they could run a sumo palace or a sumo hall show in the 90s. Around 2001 or so, there was, and this is where we're gonna lead it to Futen, there was sponsorship trouble, again, much like PWFG, but basically because of MMA, real MMA pride and all of that was wrecking everything. So they had to shut it down for a few years. And 2004, they kind of came back, but it was like running a handful of shows a year, not like a real comeback or anything like that. So around this point in 2005, that led to what we're doing. We're going to talk about Daisuke Ikeda was his opponent in this match, and he was a Battle Arts guy through and through. This is the main rivalry of Battle Arts, Ikeda versus Ishikawa. I think pretty much anybody who knows Battle Arts will tell you that in terms of just obviously the owner of the company and his foil, so to speak. There were other great wrestlers that I love, like Carl Greco, you know, and Atsuka, you mentioned earlier, a great wrestler in his own right, you know, but a lot of great wrestlers, but that's the main rivalry. Ikeda ended up touring a bit outside of Battle Arts into All Japan in the late 90s. And basically when Noah split off, he went to Noah more or less full time because then Battle Arts closed down and he was at Noah. His pro style wrestling, he was good, like very good at it. There's nothing wrong with him. It's more so they never really got behind him. He was like the fourth or fifth best guy or ranked guy in Wave, which was Misawa's faction at the time. He was kind of like an under member of that. Had some good matches, like really great matches, like Timon Honda at one point. But he kind of flamed out around 04 and 05 and show or so. And at this point, Battle Arts is still running a few shows a year at 04, 05, 06. They would make a full comeback in around 07. And by full comeback, I mean like run a show per month. And that's when Futen and Battle Arts are really picking up. But in 2005, and the show we're about to talk about was Ikeda running a spinoff of Battle Arts to obviously supplement what they were doing there. And it kind of bring the young guys, because Ishikawa had trained a bunch of young guys. He himself had wrestled in like 01 and things like that. But during the time, Battle Arts wasn't doing a lot. So he trained a bunch of new guys and they're starting off this new company. And basically Futen, it's not like there's some great big story behind it or anything like that, other than it's a spinoff of Battle Arts.
Similar to the way like 01 started as a spinoff, and lots of stuff has spun off of New Japan. Like, I remember Heisei Ishingun and stuff like that
from a very
long time ago. Okay, so as tends to happen with Japanese promotions, like they will spin off a little satellite.
Well, with maybe a couple of exceptions, literally the whole history of Shoot Style is a spin-off of New Japan.
Yeah, yeah.
The UWF.
Yeah.
So almost the whole genre, except maybe Hard Hit, which was a DDT spin-off of all things. Yes, a DDT Shoot Style promotion is probably the only Shoot Style promotion in Japan that doesn't have a direct lineage to New Japan. But as Dylan said, by this point, like in the mid-2000s, partly because of Japanese MMA, Shoot Style's really just, it's out of favor, it's out of style.
The real company has cropped up and have shown people what the reality of this kind of style of fighting actually is. And so they're kind of caught between two stools, I guess. Like, they're not real enough to appeal to the real people, but they're also not pro wrestling fake worked enough to appeal to that crowd as well. So they're just sort of, they're a hanging nothing in the middle, all of these kind of Shoot Style promotions.
And I think Battle Arts would have had a great chance for success because, like I said, they were bringing people of different styles. It wasn't all like this match was not a complete representation of Battle Arts in and of itself. This was like taken to a new level with Futen, you know, because in the original Battle Arts, you had, like I said, they worked with even Joshi promotions like JWP and stuff coming in there, and Arcion, and they were bringing hardcore guys, bringing lucha guys. You would see high spots in their matches. And we had a little bit of that in this match we're going to talk about. But they would have, it wasn't like they were trying to say, oh, like rings. That was like, we are trying to be real.
Yeah.
Like, this is real. This is harder hitting and more real, but still very much pro wrestling. You had the flair of the lucha style, the high spots, you know, fancy submissions, things like that. So they had all of that in the original Battle Arts. Here with Futen Ikeda, who, and you could see it in this match. If you watch the match, and I will kind of go through it, you could see that of the two, Ikeda is the more strike-based guy. That's what he likes in his wrestling. And Ishikawa was more of an all-around talent with grappling and wasn't afraid to be there. Like I said, he was very inspired by Inoki. And like Mark was saying, obviously Shoot Style at this point had been really out of favor because of the reasons he said. Like, rings was no more. UWFI had been gone for like 7-8 years at this point. And rings had, I think rings was, a big shout out to this guy, Jack Shares Graps on Twitter.
Yeah, he's been uploading all of rings, hasn't he? Yeah.
Yes, exactly. I've commented and retweeted as much of those as I can when I'm on there. I love that dude, like I said, and he's doing a great work on there. Me and this guy, Eric, we've been talking about him all over the place. I don't know how popular rings are to a lot of modern fans just because it's been gone for so long, but they actually ended up becoming a full shoot company at one point, like at the end of 99 and going on from there. So Battle Arts was kind of like the last bastion of this. And now we're seeing Futen come there, and like I said, a little bit later on, 2007 or so, they would run some more shows for a few years. But the crazy thing is, Futen actually outlasted Battle Arts by a good few years, but to no real like mainstream success or anything like that. They never became like super big or anything. This was very much like you were saying; it's more of an underground indie, full indie promotion at this point, rather than where they were at in the late 90s.
If we look at the attendance of this show, I think this is the third lowest attendance of any match on the 104 list.
Was there any attendance to this show? This was shot so dark, I don't think I could see anybody in the crowd.
We'll get onto the shooting in a minute because I think we've all got points about the certain aspects of the presentation. But I think the only, according to Cage Match, this had an attendance of 454. And I think the only two that are lower is actually WWE shows, because you've got a BT Studios no fans show, and there's a Full Sail show. And supposedly, Full Sail only has a 400 capacity.
Yeah.
So there's actually an NXT proper show on this list that has lower attendance than this boutique Japanese Shoot Style indie match.
And so to finish off the newbie prep on Battle Arts and Futen, is there any kind of like stylistic or rules differences or anything like that between Battle Arts and Futen, or is it simply just essentially the same product with a different name?
Knockouts and submissions is the name of the game.
I figured no pinfalls pretty quick.
So that's you go on, Mark.
I kind of read something that Futen specifically allowed closed fist punches.
That was something I was going to get onto. I very much noticed lots of punching in the face and lots of kicking a man while he was down. And I was like, okay, so here are the rules then, submission or KO, but it's fine to punch people in the face. And so is straight up just kicking a dude in the head while he's on the mat.
I've never seen someone take a punt as many times and not be in a bookies.
Yeah, absolutely horrible joke.
An absolute horrible situation,
which we'll get onto, I think, when we talk about the match in full. Is there anything else we need to know, do you think, Dylan, before we just dive into this match?
Yeah, just a little bit about these guys specifically. I just want to say about them, I would really grade these guys among the greatest shoot stylists ever. Even though, again, their style is a lot different than like Volkan or Kiyoshi Tamura, like the guys that everyone noticed from Rings. I would say, like, if you looked at my list, they had this greatest wrestler ever list, 2016. I had Ishikawa in my top 10 and Ikeda was in my 30. And maybe they'll drop a little bit, you know, the next time we do this in the next couple of years or whatever. But they were up there. Like, these guys were really great shoot style in-ring performers. And as I said, Ikeda and Ishikawa, they have a lot more great matches than just this one. There was a specific reason that I picked this one as a must-see match, which I'm certain was very obvious to many people watching it. But they have a lot of great matches. You can find them online. In the original Battle Arts in the 90s, they had a great, great list of matches. And even up to 2020, they got brought back into WXW.
I was there at that show.
And you were there.
I was there live for... So it was an ambition match with Ikeda versus Ishikawa in, as you said, March 2020. And it was up there with one of the most uncomfortable and yet viscerally captivating matches I've ever seen.
It's a cliche to call this kind of thing a car crash, isn't it? Because, like, it is uncomfortable to watch, but it's hard to look away from. And we should probably say, like, ambition is kind of like WXW's kind of shoot style offshoot tournament they do in conjunction with 16 Carat every year.
So that match, and they were both in their early 50s at that point, included someone running multiple feet to do a running shoot headbutt with no protection whatsoever. It was, I'm a guy that gets drawn towards shoot headbutts. I know I shouldn't. I know they're horrible, but there's something about them, the visceral horribleness that just makes me pop, and then I feel dirty for doing so.
We've discovered Mark's guilty wrestling secret.
Oh, wow. Well, this is a show about revelations right now. We're here to let it all fly. No hiding anything. I think my normal co-host for the Eastern Lariat, Striga, he's German. I think he was there too, but he would probably hated that headbutt spot too. So it's okay on that one. But yeah, That's basically what you've got here. These guys are great shoot style. Ishikawa, obviously, he was the owner of Battle Arts, but he was also the ace of the company. And Ikeda was kind of his main rival. So then now we're in Futen. This was the first ever show for Futen, by the way. This was the debut show.
I was going to ask that because of the name of the show.
Bachi Bachi 1.
Yeah. So this is Yokohama Red Brick Warehouse, apparently with 454 people you can't see in it.
But you can hear them at the end, to be fair.
You can hear them occasionally. They're not constantly up.
At the end, really, more than anything.
Yeah. And there are a couple of spots, like, in the match where they come up and, you know, suddenly get very interested in what's going on. I'm going to start with the presentation, as Mark alluded to.
The Japanese Kevin Dunn.
Holy shit. Whoever edited this should be barred from working in wrestling ever again. I've mentioned it on the show before. My job used to be making wrestling TV shows. So I spent several years shooting and editing wrestling. And this is how you do it when you don't know what you're doing at the beginning. And then you quickly learn this is not how to present pro wrestling. Like, it's the editing I had most problems with. It's edited like it's a wrestling scene in a low budget movie. And it made it very hard for me to concentrate the first time I watched it. I had to watch it twice. Like, putting three cuts in a back suplex doesn't make that look cooler or more impactful. It just makes it hard to watch. I wrote, the editing makes it less must-see and more can hardly watch. I found it very, very difficult.
both can be true in this case, I guess you could say. But yeah, you know, like I said, Futen, just to kind of counter what you said earlier about it being a spinoff of New Japan, it's almost more like what New Japan did WrestleLand and stuff like that. And those, like, it was kind of different, but also kind of the same. Like, they were very interleague companies. Like, Futen would often use Battle Arts guys. They would bring in some other guys, like, you know, Kengo Bashimo and stuff like that from, you know, K-Dojo and a lot of stuff like that. I think Zach worked one of the last Futen shows, Zack Sabre Jr., was around 2014, 2015. He was on one of them. So it was kind of similar, just to say. But yes, the editing on the show, definitely, like you said, Kevin Dunn would be so proud of this, I think, if he watched this.
The angles changed so fast and seemingly at random. It was just... It was so... There are shots in this that definitely last a half a second or less. It was so hard... As a professional editor to watch this, I hope they didn't edit all of their shows like this.
I wonder if that was, like I said, I mean, this was a very small show, obviously, and really one of the dark ages of Japanese wrestling in general, like the mid-2000s. This is when New Japan was going through a lot of stuff going on in the mid-2000s. You know, All Japan was in the middle of the Muta era. You know, it was just a Joshi was like completely dead. Like All Japan Women's was about to die for real. Like the company was about to go out of business in 2005. So it's like, everything was kind of at a weird place right now in Japanese wrestling. But so I'm guessing that there probably wasn't a huge budget for some of this. No,
and like, so, and you can see, I mean, I can go tech nerd if you like, but I could see from the cameras, the other cameras at times.
Yeah.
And I could tell like there were at least two different types of cameras being used. And one of those was very low budget and consumer. And maybe because they're this small spin-off niche, tiny independent thing, like perhaps they see this presentation as a way to stand out from the standard way of, you know, you would be picking this up on a DVD or more likely in Japan at this point still a VHS, and this style would make it very different to the New Japan VHS you've just got off the shelf, or the or literally any other taped show you could buy at that point. If anybody liked it, good for them, but I don't think I would be going back and buying another tape if like this is what I had seen of the main event.
I think that there's a reason this didn't blow up. New Japan didn't steal this when they when Bushiroad bought it, and they were just like, man, we need to take this Futen style of camera work and bring it to the mainstream. Can you imagine if that happened, like the original G1 that was on New Japan World, and all of them were shot like this? All of those great Ishii matches and stuff, Ishii matches, and then they're just like...
Yeah, like not being able to see his clothesline because somebody's put four edits in and one of them's at somebody's feet. And there's a shot of somebody's backside for no reason at some point in this. They just cut to an arse and a taint pointing at the camera. It's just, it's horrible. It's so pointless. But no, the match itself, if you can see through the style, there is an actual match going on here. And
yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like my closing note, but it will do just as well as a start, he says, 20-odd minutes into the recording. This, to me, was kind of like as close as pro wrestling gets to being an underground martial art.
Yeah, I can see that.
Like, this was not sports entertainment. This was a sport, and if you happen to find it entertaining, good for you, seems to be like the idea behind it. I would watch more of it if I could see it in a better presented way, other than something that gave me a headache. Because the match itself is like, it is an engrossing fight. Once you get used to the style, I think. And they tried to get you into the style immediately with Ikeda just clubbing Ishikawa with a forearm right at the bell and knocking him down for like a 6 or 7 count to like really establish what's going on and like establish the beef between them.
Yeah, and I was wondering what you thought of this. When you saw this, were you thinking, man, this has to be some kind of blood feud or something that happened?
I got the impression that they probably didn't like each other very much.
Yes.
Because like, or they loved each other a lot, because there are very few people I would let kick me in the head the way these two kicked each other in the head. There are some, I call them frankly unnecessary kicks.
Yeah.
Including one where I think it's Ishikawa hoofs Ikeda in the ribs, and it sounds like a gun going off. And he's not the one wearing kick pads. So think how hard he must have kicked him with laced boots to make that noise. It was horrible.
There's a famous quote, I think it was by Ishikawa, actually describing his matches with Ikeda. And someone had asked him about, why do you punch each other so hard in the face? And I'm paraphrasing, but the quote is something like, we're not punching each other hard in the face. We're punching every idiot that calls wrestling fake in the face, or something like that.
Yep.
There is a very famous image. I think I've got it saved on my phone in my bookmarks, and it is a straight punch from one of these two. I think Ikeda's the one getting punched, and you can just see the face just rippling from the effect of the punch. This is what these guys did. This match was their hallmark. It's probably the thing that Ishikawa and Ikeda are most remembered for. Is their matches against each other.
I mean, it's similar in some ways to Volta and Ilya Dragunov. What are they known for? Volta beating the absolute piss out of Dragunov and seeing if Dragunov can come back from it. Like, it's not that dissimilar to that kind of dynamic. And like, in terms of the punches, there are some parts where you can see they are pulling them in a pro wrestling style. So like, there's a stand-up swinging section, and the first one lands quite hard and makes a good noise and makes the crowd go ooh. So they then, by the next three or four, which you can see from the camera angle they use, are just kind of like passing through each other's hair. But because they've done, the first one has gone so big, everybody in the building is kind of like buying that the others are also landing hard, and they sell them well as well. But there are also other parts where one will have the other down on the mat and will just sock him right in the jaw. I mean, I imagine it's because like the camera is right up close, and you know, it's going to show if you don't hit him. And like, he's clearly like, he's pulling it a bit. Like, he's clearly not hitting him as hard as he can. He's not looking to break the man's jaw, but like, there is definite contact and a definite sound. And it's like, I don't want to say it's uncomfortable, because that part isn't uncomfortable. I found the kicks more uncomfortable than the punches in this match. I think I've said like three or four times now, the kicks, the unprotected kicks to the head were like, a couple of them made me dry heave, I think.
Well, shout out to Dave Ditch. He was the one that interviewed Ishikawa, a good friend of mine. I remember that interview and everything. But, you know, Ishikawa, he's just such a unique guy here. But if you look at it, because that's what everyone's going to notice, the hard hitting, the stiff shots, the jaw cracking. But if you really look at the match, there's actually a pretty decent bit of wrestling psychology in here. And you mentioned that, you mentioned the opening part where he, you know, where Ikeda, basically they started off with a handshake, but then Ikeda cheap shotted him right away. So this is an example of wrestling psychology at work, because you start off with a cheap shot and the tease knockout, because he was down for a 7 count, like you said. This was not dissimilar in thought to a match like, say, I don't know if you guys have seen this match, but Becky Lynch versus Bianca Belair at WrestleMania this year, where she hit the rock bottom on her seconds into the match to play off of their storyline.
Yeah.
It established the heel dynamic right away, and also got everyone watching immediately roped into the match. You've hit this big move. Yeah. He gets up at the 8 count, and Ishikawa did casually get up like a badass and all of that. And then they just start punching. So they're doing a lot of here. And if you notice a lot of the match too, if you watch the match in and of itself, there's many, many parts where Ikeda, well, like you said, the kicks were devastating and very hard. But Ishikawa, whenever they went to the grappling exchange or the mat portion, Ishikawa would always have, even if Ikeda would get one up on him, he would always be able to escape with relative ease and get the advantage that way. So you would have Ikeda, a much more accomplished striker, versus Ishikawa, who would always be able to counter him. And that was a part of the psychology and the dynamic of the match itself.
Yeah, we might have given the impression from the off that like this match is just kicks and punches. It's not. There's plenty of like on the mat grappling. I particularly enjoyed Ishikawa repeatedly trying to rotate Ikeda's lower leg around as if he were an action figure to make the sole of his foot point at his own chin. He does that at least twice. And there's a great, brilliant moment where Ikeda has Ishikawa in a leg lock, but refuses to break the ropes repeatedly. So Ishikawa just yanks on his leg and reverses it and forces Ikeda to grab the ropes himself and make the break. Excellent. Loved it.
It's brilliant. The crowd absolutely pissed themselves because it's funny, but it's great psychology.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's something I think gets a little underrated with this match because everyone talks about it. I mean, if you look it up on Google, you'll see websites and headlines and stuff saying, is this the most violent match ever or something like that, just in terms of the most brutal match or something like that. But there actually was a lot. And after he got to the rope, he held on. And then when Ishikawa countered, it showed Ikeda being a coward. You know what I'm saying?
Like
as soon as Ishikawa countered that, Ikeda ended up like rushing to the ropes as fast as he could, even though he had just refused to break the hold on Ishikawa. So you had that psychology there.
And then the follow-up to that is he's then the first one on his feet. And before Ishikawa can get up, Ikeda is right over and booting him in the ribs and in the face. And that kind of fires Ishikawa up as a babyface. When he's back on his feet, like he unloads with two, I mean, I use the phrase gunshot for a kick, but like two huge, loud slaps, and then just keeps on slapping him. Was that a young Daisuke Sekimoto I spied in someone's corner?
He wrestled in Futen before, so that may very well have been.
Ah, there's a man who looks very much like him, just sort of lurking around a ring post at ringside.
Yeah, he wrestled in Battle Arts too. He, Sekimoto at this point, 2005, I mean, he had wrestled in 01 and stuff around that time. Mm. He was still much younger than he was now, obviously, 17 years ago, but still a guy that even back then was a great, great prospect and somebody big in the indie scene. Mm.
One of the things that was actually, it made sense when you mentioned that Ishikawa was a big fan of Inoki. When you said that, that's jumped out because there are actually some very, there's a couple of kicks that are very reminiscent of Inoki versus Ali, where Ishikawa's on his back and he's throwing the leg kicks from his back. So actually that was a useful point when you said it, is you can see that Inoki element there. But we're rushing a little bit towards the end is that for all the violence, there is a clear structure in this match. As you said, Dylan, there's a clear heel versus face dynamic. There's the clear sense that Ishikawa is the better grappler and he's using it to fight from underneath. And you can almost argue that Ikeda is trying to rely on sheer violence. I mean, yes, Ikeda grapples. He's trying to rely more on those vicious punts, more on those punches. And it's Ishikawa relying more on traditional wrestling holds, like the holds, the suplexes.
Ikeda's the striker who will grapple if he has to, whereas Ishikawa is the grappler who will strike if he has to.
And also, I did not expect to ever see what I would call a shoot knee drop, but Ikeda does one here.
Oh, that was really good going in there. And something I mentioned too at the end, and this is not a long match. This was like a
it's like just shy of 14 minutes, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So you see all of this happen, and there's a portion of the match, probably after those hard kicks you were talking about, they had some punches, but you look at him, and Ikeda, he starts to bleed from the mouth from all of these shoot punches Ishikawa was throwing, and you just see Ishikawa, the hair is all frazzled, they have everything going on. It's like they're selling in this 12, 13, 14 minutes, they're selling that this is like, they've been through a war with each other, they put it through each other, and they so effectively did that. And, you know, the other piece of psychology that's worth mentioning here towards the end of the match was basically they do all of this stuff, and finally, it's like, until the very end, we see our first actual wrestling move, because we did have a couple, which was,
we sort of see a pro wrestling move. The editing made me want to throw my iron at something.
Oh, this is when it got really bad too.
I presume we're talking about the double clothesline spot, which had like shots of just about everything except them hitting each other.
Yes, that was bad. And then also the backdrop driver that is, they started to get there as well. Yeah. Like once they started to get to backdrop driver. So I love the escalation because we went through the violence, the hitting, the grappling, and finally at the apex of the match, we see the backdrop drivers come in there. And that's when the crowd starts coming in. You mentioned those enziguris, those jumping kicks that Inoki was known for. Ishikawa brings them out here. That's when the crowd actually finally gets into it. The arena is shot all dark. You can't see anybody, like Kieran said, but they finally start to react at the very end when he starts to do that. They get into actively everything after the quiet first portion of the things. And in the end, again, they go back to the mat, and that's where Ishikawa gets the edge, and finally for good, as he locks in the crossface chicken wing, which scores the tap out win. Shades of Bob Backlund.
I was going to say, Bob Backlund, who wrestled for UWFI at some point.
He also wrestled for Battle Arts.
Did he? This wasn't quite Backlund-style chicken wing. This wasn't hanging onto the back and getting the hooks in. Ikeda was face down on the mat, and Ishikawa got... Is it a reverse mount if you climb on their back? I don't know. I don't do UFC. And kind of just manages to sort of wriggle his hand under the chin and then wriggle his other hand around like under the arm and just about manages to get the fingers clasped underneath. And there's no big struggle. There's sort of Ikeda thinks about it for about 5 seconds. He's like, no, he's bigger than me and I'm not getting out of this. And he just taps out.
It's the world's most sheepish tap out as well.
He seems almost embarrassed to tap out, doesn't he?
Yeah. You know, I like that though, because that's one of my big gripes about regular wrestling is like when somebody will put in an arm bar, because in real life, if you do an arm bar and it's locked in, you're tapping out. There is no like scrambling around. Like, you know, I don't know if you guys have any training. Like you didn't do UFC, as you said.
No. But I did karate when I was about 10. Yeah. And I've done one day of pro wrestling training and it hurt. And I decided, I'll just watch it and talk about it on the internet.
That's a brilliant idea on your part, Kieran. Let me let you know that. It's much more realistic to tap out right away to a move like that where, you know, there is no escape on there. But I thought it was a fitting finish and kind of an understated one, but it fits this promotion, which is this, like you said, an underground, really indie promotion trying to start off in being a sister company to Battle Arts, which is in and of itself a company that is really more effectively on hiatus at this point, wouldn't come back for another 2 years. So it fit this underscored main event of the promotion, the first ever show for the promotion. And and obviously that's where it gets talked about is as the stiffness of the match. But I thought it was really good to have that part in there, the finish as it was.
So yeah, that's it. That's our match. I think so. The presentation took away from it a lot. For me, I always try to watch matches twice for this show anyway. Once just kind of like once as a fan, just seeing the match, particularly if it's something I haven't seen before. And then once taking notes as a podcast host. This one I definitely enjoyed more second time around because my brain knew it. I was going to be watching something that was edited like The Bourne Supremacy. and could kind of like see awesome. Through the presentation to the match underneath, like similar to what I had to do with like we did Timothy Thatcher versus Volta. This is shot and cut worse than that, but that one gave me more of a headache, possibly because that goes on for another 10 minutes or whatever. It's like one of the great things about this list is the diversity, and this is completely different to anything we've covered so far and very, very different to what we're doing next week. Very enjoyable and very different. And kind of like, I don't know, like, wrestling is like any other art form. It has to experiment or it doesn't evolve in any way.
Yeah.
And this is the pro wrestling experiment. So music and movies and all of that and theater has to experiment and develop. And this is one of wrestling's interesting little experiments, I think.
That's a really... great way to describe it, in my opinion.
Shoot style is essentially, it is taking one element of wrestling, which is the realism, and dialing it up. And as Dylan said, there were different arguments over what way to dial it up, which is how you got all these spin-off promotions like PWFG and UWFI and Rings, which I forgot about for a second. I think what's fascinating about this match, and I'm going to go on a little bit of a side tangent here, is something like Rings is it's very technical and it's probably the pinnacle of the technical grappling element of shoot style. This is It's got more technique than you think. And on rewatching, you can see the technique a lot more in this match. But at its heart, it is about that brutality, that violence. It's two wrestlers who are unafraid to sort of hold back the violence. And I think that brutality is something that we're going to see a lot in this project. We've already seen it, that kind of that visceral thrill of sort of something going a little bit too far. We've seen it in Eddie Guerrero versus JBL with the blood. We've seen
pro wrestling style brutality. This is different. So like, this is almost like brutality versus violence, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Like, if you can draw a distinction there.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually.
Like, Atsushi Onita matches are violent, but they're not brutal to me, if that makes sense.
Oh, I totally agree with that. He's much more of a spectacle, like violence type of guy.
Exactly. Yeah. So we've seen the spectacle of brutality, the spectacle of violence, if you like.
Yeah.
And this is like gritty. Like,
this is, like I said, this is pro wrestling is a gritty underground martial art. And Mark, if I've cut you off from finishing your point, I'm sorry. Feel free to take as much time as you like.
That's fine. But it's that kind of, as you said, there are so many different elements of the violence aspect of wrestling and the different ways you can do it. So we've done Matsumoto versus Nagayo, which was very different to Eddie versus JBL, which is very different to this. Umaga versus Cena has elements of it. Thatcher versus Walter. These are all previous episodes that I've done. So if this is your first time, go back and listen to our previous episodes. Shill over. But it's wrestling. Violence is a part of wrestling, and it's fascinating to see. It's going to be fascinating to see how all of these different matches that we're going to be covering on this podcast all approach it slightly differently. And this is probably up there with the pinnacle of brutality that we'll see on this list. There's at least one that I can think of that's probably going to be a bit close to it. And
there's another one with lots of punches in the face coming up. That's
we're thinking of the same one. I think
we're thinking of the same match. Yeah,
The one with one wrestler without any shoes on.
Yeah,
we're thinking of the same match.
Dylan, I'd realized I didn't ask you the question I would normally ask any guest that comes on the show. What for you makes this the must-see match? What was it that put this match on your list?
Yeah, and I was going to get into that because I think that this match in particular features among the stiffest and most devastating and at times even unsettling punches in wrestling history. I know this particular style of match, you know, we're talking about it now, never mind the camera cuts and all that stuff, which is you are completely in agreement. I think everyone would be on your side on. But even if you're a fan of the style or you can get past the technical aspects of it in terms of the production values, this style of match won't be for everyone. But besides the stiffness, they did an excellent job integrating pro wrestling tropes into everything as well. And for me, even if you don't necessarily consider this one of the greatest matches ever, I really encourage everyone to watch it because it's so unique in wrestling. And I think this kind of match, and particularly at this level for all kinds of reasons, some of them positive, some of them negative, but I feel like this kind of exact match is kind of unlikely to ever be matched in wrestling again with how things have gone. So to me, this was an easy vote on my list for one of the must-see matches, just because of the level of, like you said, the underground style of violence here. I don't think it can be matched in the modern era, and everything about it kind of plays into that. Even the production values, even though it's bad, it plays into that underground feeling, that this non-homogenized, non-pristine type of vision of wrestling. It's totally different to what you would see these days. And that's why, to me, this came to mind very quickly as one of my favorite matches. And I will say one more thing on Ishikawa. You know, this, all of him particularly as a wrestler, battle arts as a promotion, it has a really special place in my heart. And Futen is a spinoff of that, obviously. But you know, I was talking to Ishikawa one time, one of my very first articles I ever wrote in wrestling, probably 7, 8, 9, 10 years ago at this point. Whenever I did it, Somebody passed along to him. I actually got to talk to him. He actually speaks English a little while. After this, after Battle Arts and Futen was done, he started the Battle Arts Training Dojo in Canada with Santino Morella. Yeah, if you don't know that, he started doing his own training in Canada. Santino was a big fan of his, and they started their promotion, or not a promotion, but it was more like a dojo together. And you see guys like Thatcher take from this style, his style in particular, Hideki Suzuki, like nowadays in the modern era. These guys have elements of Thatcher, of Ishikawa in their styles. And when I talked to him, he was so humble. When I talked to him, and the same kind of style that you talked about in that quote you mentioned earlier, at one point later on, Battle Arts had an all women's promotion called Queen Bee, which was another spinoff type of deal. They had a few shows, not really super popular in the late 2000s. But you see somebody like Asuka in WWE nowadays. I'm wearing her shirt, by the way. I just want to point that out.
That shirt is the only piece of WWE merchandise I own. I have it in my drawer in my bedroom.
hands down, one of the best wrestling shirts. And I'm not a big merchandise person, but yeah, her shirt there was really great. Yeah. But all he wanted to do was put over her and how great she was as a wrestler. And she was good at that Queen Bee style originally, which she still carries elements of to this day. So I just wanted to put it out there that these guys, they had their own philosophy on wrestling, their own style, and obviously influence and a real love. And, you know, that brutality and that violence that you guys were mentioned, that's belayed by the one thing I think is almost the most important thing in wrestling throughout any kind of style, any kind of match. There will be matches that are violent. There'll be lucha matches, high flying, super athletic, technical, whatever. It belays the passion that these guys have for it. And that's what comes through in this match more than so many, many others. And then I hope everybody checks it out and gives it a shot at least. And hopefully they enjoyed this little episode that we did as well. And I was very happy to be on with you guys to talk about it.
Well, we thank you for coming on and educating us, particularly me, on something I hadn't seen before and found fascinating, I have to say. The floor is yours. Feel free to get your socials and your projects out there.
Yeah, just check me out on Twitter. I'm not a huge social media person, but you can follow me at @Viva_0. You can check out my regular show, Eastern Lariat. We have our own Twitter at Eastern Lariat. Very cleverly named title for that account. But me and my good friend Striga, he helps run cagematch.net. We do a lot on there too. So hopefully everybody enjoys that website and our show. If you want to hear about Japanese pro wrestling, that's the place to be. We have a Patreon. We have all kinds of stuff there. We're going to do our half year awards episode in probably right after this show releases. And what's more American than watching BK Battle Arts Bocce Bocce style wrestling for the Independence Day? So I'm so proud to represent for the true patriotism, which is Bocce Bocce style and Battle Arts and Futen.
Amazing. Thank you again. As for us, you can follow @MustSeeMatches on Twitter and hit up linktr.ee/MustSeeMatches for the full list of matches, subscription links, and a whole load more. Mark and I have another podcast called DD Teach at DD Teach Pod on Twitter, all about Japan's DDT pro wrestling. I am @KieranEdits on Twitter, and Mark is
Monkey_Buckles on Twitter.
No, it was nearly. Almost 2 weeks in a row he got it right.
Nearly.
@Monkey_Buckles. Next week, Canadian independent wrestler Palm Singh Mann will be here to talk about pretty much the diametric opposite of this match. It's our first trip to Universal Studios Orlando for AJ Styles versus Abyss from TNA Lockdown 2005, which, in an odd twist of happenstance, was the same day as this match we've just talked about.
What?
Yes. Couldn't be any more different. So please come back for that. Thank you for listening. Thank you to Dylan again, and goodbye.